It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Can we be there?
Ah, we are here. Don't have to think about it, right here, right now. Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today. How you doing, Troy?
Fantastic. Everything's good, man. It's been a great summer.
Can you turn his mic up a little bit, Steven? It's been a good summer for you, Troy?
Fantastic. Boys are playing a lot of baseball. Got to cover some Broncos, and now I can feel training camp right around the corner.
Dude,
good and bad.
We are on the doorstep.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it? The 11th today.
17 days away.
17 days away. The rookies will report on the 27th, isn't that correct? And then veterans on the 28th.
Right.
The coaches will be there probably a week ahead of time. We are barreling down the road to training camp. And I, for one, I mean, I'm ecstatic. I don't know how I'm going to work it out with the birth of my new baby boy, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah, that's an important time. I would say you will not regret any extra time you spend at home during training camp. You know, it's hard to miss regular season stuff. I almost missed the birth of my oldest son. I was supposed to be in Seattle covering the Broncos. And we're like, okay, this trip's off. This is getting way too close because you start looking at flights. Could I get back in time? So, no, it's an exciting time. There's optimism here, I think, you know, and a fair bit and a healthy dose of cynicism based on 5-11 and the 8-game losing streak. But the West is open back up again. The Chiefs, for me, have kind of come back to the pack some, losing their best player in Marcus Peters and Alex Smith. No matter what you think of him, he never turned the ball over.
No.
You could win regular season games.
He was a legitimate MVP candidate last year.
Yeah.
5-1 touchdown to interception ratio, over 4,000 yards, top five in the league completion percentage. I mean, Alex Smith was like, he might be, and actually, let me just say this, I think he's the most underrated player in the NFL. Even though, despite being a former first overall pick, I just think the sentiment shifted on Alex Smith, and it's hard for us as an NFL community to come back off of that stigma and then re-acknowledge what he's done, particularly the last year, because it was, I mean, think about it. How many other quarterbacks, and let's just broaden it in the history of the NFL, or let's just say the last 20 years, how many quarterbacks in the last two decades have been on the winning team of the division, 4,000-yard passer, 68% completion on a 5-1 touchdown interception ratio? It's just not out there.
It's a small number. And what it's hurt with Smith is, you know, Captain Charlie Checkdown, like, I get it. And that's been part of his reputation until last year. He definitely stretched the field more. He had the weapons to do it. But he came into the NFL, Zach, at a time when you think 35, 40 touchdowns.
Right.
Is a good year.
Right.
And we've talked about on your show, Mike Evans and I in the mornings, I'll be on there Friday, we've talked about how the new modern NFL is averse to risk. And if you're a quarterback, Case Keenum last year was 22-7. Mm-hmm. That was a great year. Whereas 10 years ago, you're like, it's a nice year at the 8-game mark. You know, I mean, that's what you'd expect after 10 games, not after 16. So the modern NFL has become more averse to risk than ever. And a quarterback that can take care of the ball while still taking a few chances is invaluable. Can Case Keenum be that guy? He was last year.
He was.
Second most accurate passer to Drew Brees, and that's where the optimism lies, I'll be honest. If their offense is functional and they play with a lead or even keep the game close, then your best player, Von Miller, Chris Harris, are now part of the outcome again. If you're down 10 points, 14 points after the first quarter or at halftime, they take Von Miller out of the game. They don't rush. They don't pass the ball and expose their quarterback to risk.
So, that's right.
If their offense can be functional and more specifically run the football, not when they need to, but when they want to, they got a chance. They got a chance. I mean, I'm more on the side of cautiously optimistic because I have seen this offense struggle to the point where it's prove it for me.
Yeah.
I don't give them the benefit of the doubt. And I like Keenum. I like a lot of things about him. Nothing is too small, so that's why you expect big things from him. Every detail matters. He's got Peyton Manning characteristics in that way.
There's no question.
But again, you got to see it. And for me, their offense is entirely prove it. Prove it. Whether it's Musgrave, whether it's Keenum, whether it's the line, whether it's Royce Freeman, prove it. I give no one the benefit of the doubt right now.
Troy, I think you, and Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokely today, Troy, I think you speak for most of us in a sense where, you know, we just need to see it. We need to see it. Now, we can talk about different levels of optimism within this conversation. I happen to be probably among the folks here at The Fan, probably on the more optimistic spectrum, because I have a tendency to really believe in Case. But that being said, I'm not banging the table about a win total. Or a playoff appearance. It's still, it's prove it season. Like you said, it's prove it season, because for a couple years in a row, the same suggestions have been made around this time of year. Well, the offensive line got an upgrade, and you assume, and I've been steadfast in saying we have to be careful with letting optimism bleed into expectations. Right. And I think this time of year, sometimes we talk ourselves into something, and then the next thing you know, you're sitting in this box of your expectations when it shouldn't have been the case in the first place.
Right. That's why, again, I see them as 500, you know, and a team that can be in it till the end. So if you're around 500 in this division, maybe 9-7 gets you in this year. Maybe. Mm. I mean, I'm just saying, the Chargers for me are the team to beat, just a tick above the Chiefs. So if you're the Broncos, and I talked about this on the morning show, at some point you got to beat one of those teams on the road. They haven't won an AFC West road game since Manning retired.
How? I mean, Troy.
So that leaves you with no margin for error at home. Like, you got to go 6-2, 7-1 at home to be a playoff team, because you're losing three out of the gate every year on the road. And it's not unlike with the Rockies we'll talk about. Like, once you just become one-sided home or road, it leaves you no margin for error. And we get back to the prove-it issue. That extends directly to the head coach.
No doubt. Vance Joseph. There's no question about that, Troy.
I've known Vance. I had him in class in college. Back in 1990 or 91. I've known Vance since he was a teenager.
Wait, you had him in class?
We
had the
same class together. See, you.
He's
a couple years older than I was, but we were in a couple of classes. One for sure at CJ in classes. I mean, I've known Vance since he was a teenager. So much to like about the guy, but is he an assistant coach trying to be a head coach? And that this year, he's got to show he's a head coach. Because last year, he showed that he was an assistant coach attempting to be a head coach, and it didn't work. New staff. Guys that listen to him more. He's got guys challenging guys. He doesn't have a bunch of guys on staff who think they should have been the head coach, not him.
Mm.
So he's got a chance. But again, prove it. Prove it. No benefit of the doubt.
Right. There's no comfortability left.
No, not at all.
You know, there's no Super Bowl rings walking through the hallway.
Right. And having Gary Kubiak around, though, does help. That will help him have that voice there. A guy who can trust to help him. That will help. But one of the reasons I do use history as a basis for learning about the future.
No, we all should. Yeah.
Using the past. And baseball, I covered it 15 years every day. It's rooted in numbers and trends and cyclical trends. And it does allow you, like the stock market, to kind of forecast things. The Broncos haven't had back-to-back losing seasons since 1972.
Richard Nixon was the president.
So that's why I'm saying, like, would it shock me if they had a losing season? No, because they were so bad last year. But history tells you with the Broncos, they don't stink back-to-back years. Now, they might end up 8-8. They've had a couple of those years since 72 mm-hmm. where they had a losing mm-hmm. season, then 8-8.
Sure.
But could this be the year that maybe they get a few breaks and you win a few you're not supposed to? And again, you went on the AFC, on the road. You got to beat the Raiders on the road. And between the Chargers and Chiefs, you got to beat one of them on the road to pretend to fashion yourself as a contender. Zach, you got to win one of those AFC West games on the road.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that just about 1:30. But Troy, when you said a couple minutes ago, you said, hey, you know, 9-7 could get in. If this division shapes up the way that it did last year, 9-7 will get you in. Because if you remember, as bad as the Broncos were in 2017, you got to like week 13.
Oh, exactly.
And they were still in it mathematically. Now, their play would, you know, tell you otherwise.
Well, if Benny Feller doesn't try to catch a ball with his face mask in Tennessee and Nashville, they go to the playoffs. I mean, and I hate to single out Benny, but he missed the ball against the Chiefs, and he missed the ball against the Titans. He catches one of those two passes. The one against the Chiefs was a harder pass to catch, a diving catch that I've seen him make. But
oh, you're talking about 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, the Kubiak's last year, excuse me, the year they did go 9-7 and missed. They were in the playoffs if he doesn't try to catch a pass with his face mask.
Right. Right. No,
Tennessee.
That's true. That's true.
So that's where how close. So all of a sudden that year looks like a lost season. He catches the ball against the Chiefs. They're 7-4. They go to 8-4. They're getting in.
Right.
He catches the ball in the end zone that day. They win. And it's not just him. There were other issues. But I'm saying that's literally how a season can spin on two plays.
And I was trying to even make the point in a more dire situation where the Broncos were losing game after game after game. The way the division stacked up in 2017 this past year, they were still mathematically in it.
They weren't in it last year.
Well, I'm saying mathematically
in it. When they gave up 51 to the Eagles, no. I told them, they are done. I covered that team. It was called the Rockies from like 2011 and 12 and 13. Like, you can say whatever you want, man. They have no chance. Because every time they played a good team, they got boat raced last year.
And I said, that's why I said your eyes told you otherwise. But right. Mathematically, look, the Chiefs sat Alex Smith week 17 because it was wrapped up by then. They were only a 9-win team at that point. Chiefs won 10 games. They had it wrapped up.
But your point, if they beat the Bengals after that just horrific performance at Philly, they were in it. I think they would have been 5-7.
Correct. Correct.
I mean, they were going to be like one game back in the wild card they won that game. And again, I didn't see them as a playoff team, so I wasn't paying that close of attention to that math. But the reality was they should have won that game against the Bengals. They didn't. It got Mike McCoy mercifully fired for his game plans. But if they win that game, they're theoretically in it. Because the wild card, again, I mean, 9-7 in the wild card usually gets you in. Usually gets you in. And that doesn't mean you're a good team, but it gets you in and you get hot. Who knows?
Right.
You know, who knows?
But that obviously didn't happen. They lose that game. Bengals come here. I think it was the first time since 1976 the Bengals came here and won. It was just bad. Last night, man, has a theme ever developed with the Colorado Rockies? How concerning is it? I want to bounce it off Troy next. All right, Troy. Troy Rank filling in for Brandon Stokley today. I know you watched the game last night, as did I. Didn't miss a moment. Unfortunately, walked away from, you know, a 3.5-hour experience pretty deflated because once again, the bullpen just absolutely cannot get out of its own way. And last night it was Jake McGee, and I forget the exact order, but after, you know, six great innings by Tyler Anderson, after he only gives up one run, we immediately get to the seventh and give up four runs. And it was something along the lines of like a walk, a double, and then a three-run jack. And I think that's actually how it went. Walk, double, three-run jack. Oberg comes in, another jack. It was painfully predictable once it started to unravel. Here we are. Okay, down multiple runs after a late inning lead once again, Troy.
And it's demoralizing for the players because it feels like when that door opens in the seventh inning that nothing but bad things can happen. I mean, the seventh inning has absolutely ruined their season for long stretches. Brian Shaw, again, I like the pickup. I didn't think he would come here and try to throw a slider and get away from his cutter, and he changed a little bit who he was. I think maybe because of the altitude, whatever. He's been awful. And Bud Black did say yesterday when I was out at Coors Field doing stuff for Denver 7, and Bud Black said when he returns, he won't be in the role he was in before. And I mean, that states the obvious, but the bigger issue is that makes sense, clearly. Who's going to handle the seventh inning? And for me, there's one answer that's curious, and we're going to talk about it later too, some more, is would you trust Gray to do it in the seventh? Now, as much as I say at times, and I get, you know, go back and forth with people on Twitter, I respectfully disagree, and I appreciate their opinions, but Gray has stuff that profiles as a reliever. He's a two-pitch guy at times. But the issue he's shown this year, Zach, is with traffic, he struggles. And in big pressure moments, he struggled. So I really want him in that situation, even though I like the stuff. So if you do bring Gray back to start, and that's not happening anytime soon, I know he's going to make at least one more AAA start.
Yep, that's right.
He was terrible his last AAA outing. Then when you bring him back, do you look to put Senzatella in the seventh? Because for me right now, there's not a great internal answer. So what I'm getting at is, if you look at this team, if you're Jeff Breidich and you're the front office, do you believe in this team enough? That's shown mental resolve, because the season was in the balance 2 weeks ago.
It was.
Like, they were close
to
being
out. They're 8 games back. And
they were out of it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, God, this road trip, they're going to be out of it. They're playing really good teams. And to their credit, went 8 of 9, pitched out of their mind. But for me, if you're the front office, given the mental resolve of this team, given what they did last year, I'm going to say owe it to them because, it's easy to say, it's not my money. You need to go get a reliever. You got to go get a guy. Like, you just can't keep pretending the answer is here. And it might be Senzatella, but it might not. You might need him to start. So who is it? Is it McGee? No, you can't trust McGee. Is it Mike Dunn? He's been on the disabled list multiple times. Is it Chris Russon? It's not this year. Maybe at the end of the season he gets it going. It's not right now. And they can't afford to blow any more seventh inning games. I mean, that seventh inning to them has just been a banana peel. And it's, you know, in talking to the guys, it's demoralizing.
It's got to be.
Because you're fighting and you're scrapping, and they know way more than they would let on that this home thing's becoming a huge issue. You're now 18 and 23 at home. For me, you got to go 29 and 11 the rest of the way. You have to get to 47 home wins.
So you got
to
win two out of every three home games.
Three out of four. 29 of basically 30 of the next four.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
And that sounds crazy. I mean, I've seen the Rockies teams do that. But, Zach, for me, 47 home wins. That's not a crazy number. And that's me giving them 41 road wins. So that's 88. If for some reason they got to a club record 44 road wins, I mean, they're on pace for that. I just say I know history again. That would be an amazing total. Let's say they get to 44 road wins. You're still going to have to get to 44 home wins then. You're still going to have to play at a minimum like 670 clip at home the rest of the way. And how do you do that when you can't beat the Diamondbacks? What is this trend? Explain it to me. Because I was just going to go to Wikipedia today and just see, did they change the ownership? Because the Diamondbacks own the Rockies at Coors Field.
9 consecutive games. It's a double franchise record where the Rockies have never lost 9 consecutive home games to the same opponent, and the Diamondbacks have never gone on the road and won 9 consecutive games in one particular visiting ballpark the way that they have Coors. So it's literally a double franchise record. I can't put my finger on it, because when I look at the Diamondbacks and I look at their roster and I watch them play, as I have dozens of times here in the past couple of years, they don't, when they're not playing the Rockies, they don't look like some Goliath that the Rockies wouldn't be able to overtake. But for whatever reason, when they get together, it bucks every trend that, I mean, you look at, and this is worth mentioning, the ERA against the Diamondbacks coming in, Troy, was over 7 as a club. And for whatever reason, they have lost now 13 of 16. So it's not just the 9 in a row here at Coors. They've lost 13 of 16 in general. And it's frustrating. And especially, you want to know what's even more frustrating? Because last night, Troy, was a game where they actually caught some breaks.
Right.
Where there was the play to left to Peralta, and he misplays it, and it goes over his head. There's the hot shot to Ahmad at shortstop, and it goes through his glove. There's a misplay at first base, which allows, I think it was Nolan, to score. They caught breaks, and they still found a way to lose it with a lackluster, to put it lightly, bullpen.
They have not pitched well against the Diamondbacks. That's the general reason why they're getting dominated. The Diamondbacks match up well with them offensively. It's just what's frustrating is before the Diamondbacks came in here and boxed their ears last time, the Diamondbacks weren't really hitting. They had just started to percolate, and they get to Coors Field and just maul the Rockies. And last night, it just feels like the Rockies, if their stars don't have huge nights, they can't beat the Diamondbacks right now. Where the Diamondbacks, it's Peralta or it's another guy that you kind of know of, but you really don't. Who is that guy with the Rockies? You know, and Desmond had a couple good at-bats, but, you know, if you're going to beat them, for me, there's two things that are going to happen. One, you just go out and, like, Freeland pitches 8 innings, 1 run, and you win. And he just basically does it himself. Or somebody we're not talking about, whether it's Parra hits a 3-run bomb, or Tom Murphy, like somebody that you're not expecting. Because right now, if Arenado, Blackman, DJ, if they're not all on point, they just seem like they can't beat the Diamondbacks. They've beaten them once this season. They have a losing record in the division. So as you try to attempt to fashion this team as a contender, and they have a reason to think that way based on last year and the talent in that room, you can't be a contender if you have a losing record in your own division and there's the team ahead of you. You can't beat. Like, at some point, you got to figure it out, especially at home. I would have, of all the trends this season, the fact that, A, they're not winning home, but the more micro version, that they can't beat the Diamondbacks here, that doesn't even make sense to me. The only team I ever saw them get dominated here, like the Atlanta Braves early in the Rockies' existence, were like 31-1 against the Rockies out of the gate. I mean, they owned them for like 4 years. But they were so much better. I mean, they were the class of the NL. This matchup doesn't make sense why it's lopsided.
And the shame is, Troy, they're 18-15 against the rest of the division.
Yeah, they've held their own because they've dominated the Giants. That's the only reason they're hanging around, is because they've done to the Giants what the Diamondbacks have done to them.
Too bad. We'll continue to keep an eye on it. Marquez is on the mound tonight. He's 2-0 with a 1.29 ERA with 14 strikeouts and no walks last two starts.
Love that.
So there's some reason for optimism heading into tonight. Troy, is Case Keenum's biggest strength the Broncos' biggest weakness? The numbers say so, and we'll dive into them next. Is Case Keenum's biggest strength the Broncos' biggest weakness? Very interesting conversation here, Troy, and Troy Rank, filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Troy, this was inspired, well, it inspired us to take a little bit of a dig into the numbers when I was listening to a conversation between Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans this morning, and Stink was talking about Case Keenum, in particular, in the red zone.
It's interesting and how good Case Keenum was. 17 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he had all kinds of stats like EPA or EPZ
or NEP.
NEP. But here's what it's going to take. It's not just on Case Keenum. It's not just
net
on
your expected points, by the way.
Yes, and you expect a lot of net points when you get into the red zone and Case Keenum is your quarterback. Don't expect net expected points with Case Keenum or anybody else playing quarterback for the Broncos. They don't fix some issues. They don't fix their offensive line. If they don't dictate, if they can't run when they have to run, if they can't convert a third down and two, those things happen. You can forget about scoring touchdowns.
Interesting stuff there. A lot to unpack. But to start, really at the outset of Stink's mini rant there, is that Case Keenum is number one in the National Football League in red zone efficiency. There was 17 touchdowns and zero turnovers for Case Keenum in the red zone. 17 touchdowns. And the Broncos, we dug into the numbers. When we looked across the entire National Football League in touchdown percentage for the amount of times you get into the red zone and then convert on them, touchdown percentage, there's 32 teams in the league. The Broncos, 32. In the most literal sense, last in the league, but now we have a quarterback coming in who was number one in the league at that specific category.
Again, if he can make them adequate, if he gets them to 16 out of 32 and makes them a functional offense that can stay on the field, grind some clock, keep the games, you know, 10-10, 13-10, where you're not down 14-0 out of the gate. The other thing he did, and if you dig even deeper in these numbers, the Vikings had the fewest sacks in the red zone. Part of that is he's nimble, but their line was good. And the other reason is they were able to run the ball. They keep teams off balance. They committed to the run. They were top five in yards and top five in carries last year, the Vikings. That was even after Cook went down, remember. But they committed to the run. So if you can run in the red zone, it opens up some of the passing game. But the Vikings, two sacks suffered in the red zone. The Broncos led the NFL in most sacks, 12. In the red zone.
Wow, I
so
didn't know that.
That's why Keenum, when people ask me about Keenum, they're like, oh, he's a journeyman. He's going to be the greatest one-hit wonder since the Macarena. I get it. We all watched Hard Knocks. We watched him lose his job to Goff. He was an afterthought last year. I get all of that. But the guy that played last year, there were things about it that weren't flukish. If you watch his film, the throws he was making, the secondary read, third reads, progressions, he looked like a quarterback that had evolved and matured. And you know, this happens once in a while in the NFL. Rich Gannon's probably the most notable example. A Jeff Garcia, where later in a guy's career, he turns into something you never thought he could be. And maybe that is Keenum. But my point is, there's statistical things he did last year that if he's even close to those numbers, the Broncos will be dramatically better offensively. But again, don't discount the fact that Keenum could lean on a running game. They weren't asking Case to throw 30 times a game and win it. I mean, Zimmerman basically was looking for an excuse to bench him every other play. They weren't asking him to do that. So that's where, for me, that's the key with Keenum. Keep him to 25 passes a game, you're going to love him. If you say, Case, throw 35 a game, like most quarterbacks, you're going to lose, and there's going to be a couple picks involved.
Well, your sort of caveat there is the same that Stink laid out. He said, you know, you're not going to have that type of red zone conversion rate that Case did a year ago, leading the NFL, 17 touchdowns, zero turnovers. You're not going to have that without that running game. He said, you're not going to have that without that offensive line. You're not going to have that without being able to dictate. And we talked about this, Stokely and I did a couple days ago. When we talk about the run game, it's the numbers are going to be the numbers, okay? And obviously, we want numbers. We want Royce Freeman to run for 1,000 yards. We want the group to collectively run for X amount and da-da-da-da. But at the same time, it's, Troy, it's almost about, can you run the football? And can you convert on that third and two that Mark lays out? Can you do that when the defense knows that you're going to run it? You know you're going to run it, and you still convert that, you know, 4.5 feet to get the first down. And that's the question I still have about this running back group and really the offensive line in general.
Well, again, running game relates back to the bullpen for me. The best teams use their bullpen when they want to, not when they have to. They align it. They create matchups. They're at their advantage. So if you're able to run the ball when you want to and impose your will, then when you get to the third and two, you're unpredictable, and the other team knows that you can punch them in the face. If you don't run all game, you throw the ball around the field. Now, hey, third and one, boys, let's be brutish football. When the guys have been in pass blocking sets for the better part of 2.5 hours, typically doesn't work. And that's the Broncos have gone into that trap where they start throwing early in a game, and then when they need that tough 1 or 2 yard gain on third down, they're not able to do it. Should they be better? Yes. If Leary's healthy, he's on the left side, they will be. I don't know about Jared Valdir. I know he looks like a professional wrestler. He's got arms the size of most supermodels' waist.
He's a big boy.
He is enormous. He should have been, what was the NWA guys? That's Nash and...
Oh, yeah, the NWO.
NWO. Who was that group with that?
It was Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. They had the Giant. He looks like kind of like the Giant.
Jared Valdir could
have... Or the Big Show, now known as.
Yeah, Valdir would have fit in that group. I'll just say, he is enormous. And lean still. He's like 6'7", 315. Like, I mean, he's a big man. But if he's able to figure it out at right tackle, and it stops the carousel and the madness at that position... Settles it down where he's just, he's just where you don't think about him every game like you did Stevens, like you did Schofield, like you did Menelik Watson. If you show up on Monday morning after a Bronco game and you're not talking about the right tackle, that's a good sign.
Exactly.
That doesn't even mean he played great. It just means he didn't get 2 holding penalties and give up 2 sacks.
It's like a good ref. It's like a good referee.
Right. You just don't remember.
Should know your name.
Who refed? Who was the right tackle? I don't remember. That's a good sign if you're a Bronco fan.
Right.
If Valdir can just do that, they should be better. I think Garrett Bowles is going to take a big step forward this year with new pass blocking sets, coaching more specific to his skill set, a year of experience. He's a crazy athlete, crazy good athlete. I think he is, and having Ron Leary next to him, a veteran presence.
That's big.
I think their line should be better. But again, prove it. I don't give their line it because I've been guilty as anyone buying into the line hype and saying, oh, they're going to be a lot better. And they're not. So I don't buy into any of it.
Do you find
yourself...
In terms
of the line hype.
Right. In terms of the offensive line. But let me ask you this. Yes, you want to see it. Of course. We are very much in prove-it mode. It was a 5-11 season. Eight-game losing streak.
Yep. That's the key. Not 5-11. Eight-game losing streak where you're non-competitive in 6 of those games.
Right. Okay. Blown out more times than anyone else in pro football. Do you find yourself... All that being said, prove-it mode, want to see it. All that being said, do you find yourself... When you look at how you felt this time last year, July 11th, 2017, July 11th, 2016, it was largely the same conversation. Do you find yourself more optimistic right now than you were at those two junctures in time? Because it's more founded optimism.
I do for one reason. They know who their quarterback is. And he had a great year last year. By any statistical measure, Case Keenum had a great year last year. Whether he will again, I don't know that. If I knew that, I wouldn't be on this show. I'd be living on a beach somewhere controlling outcomes. Like, right. I don't know that. I just know that over there and covering the players, knowing who their guy is has settled them down and created a focus they didn't have. Because not knowing who your quarterback, it's different than not knowing who your left cornerback is or who's your outside linebacker on third down. That's different than who's our quarterback. That's the leader of the room. Never, whether he wants it or not, that's the guy people look to. It's like when Willene Rosario was a catcher for the Rockies, and I like Willene personally, he was frying pan hands. Roberto Duran, hands of stone. He couldn't catch. He could hit. He had power. But when you're in baseball, Zach, every player on your team, who are they looking at when they're on defense? Your catcher. They're staring right at him. And if you're watching that guy, and he's the worst defensive player on the field, how can you take yourself seriously? And that's why when your quarterback's playing the worst, number one, other than the Browns last year, and you don't even know who it's going to be from week to week, how can you get better, dramatically better? You can't. For me, you can't. Now with Keenum, when I was over there from April on, it's just guys are like, oh, thank God, the American Idol auditions are over.
Right.
We have our guy. Maybe Paxton works out sometime in the future. He does, but we don't have to hear that conversation. We don't have to pretend to like them both. We don't have to pretend that we're all getting... We have our guy. And that has brought a sanity and clarity to the offense that was much needed. And I think Musgrave will build off of that. Bill Musgrave, when he was in Oakland, was a really good offensive coordinator. When he left, Derek Carr has not played well since he left.
That's right. They went from a 12-win team to a 6-win team.
And Carr struggled, and he had injury, but he was not the same quarterback.
No,
it looks like they picked the wrong guy. They went with the quarterback's coach and let Musgrave go, and it looks like they made the wrong choice. And so I just think with Keenum and Musgrave, Bill's, you know, he's a smart guy, played the position. He's a it feels like they're going to be better offensively for a number of reasons. And I'll give them credit. They were humbled by their complete demolition last year. And they had really good self-evaluation. Now, should they have hired Vance Joseph? That's an argument for another day. But across the board, they're like, we got to fix the coaching staff. It's not working with our guy. He has no chance. So they fixed that, at least believe it. They bring in Kubiak. They bring in DeMarcus Ware. Peyton Manning shows up. You got other coaches showing up.
Howard Mudd.
Yeah, Howard Mudd. Like, there was, for me, really good, humbling self-evaluation of 2 years ago, we were on the top of the mountain. We were on the zenith. Last year was the abyss in many ways. And they reacted to it in a way I thought was very healthy of, hey, we got to step back. It's us. It's not the league.
Acknowledgement, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the league. It's not the, you know, there's no excuses. Like, we got our butt kicked last year.
Yep.
How do we get? And so that's why I'm encouraged. And their draft class reflected that. No more, oh, this guy played 11 games at this position in college 2 years ago. He'll be fine. Like, no, they went out and got guys who were captains, who have high football IQ. They're trying to change, so I appreciate that. I just can't sit here and tell you it's going to work, but they definitely went a different direction this offseason. But the optimism for me, to your question, goes right back to they know who their quarterback is.
And they do. And to your point, you said, you know, it's injected this sort of relief and confidence that there's no more Paxton conversation. There's no more, I have to answer this question appropriately.
Right.
I don't have to be prepped by, you know, maybe Patrick Smythe, the PR director, because I know I'm going to be asked about who played better, Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch. And there's probably no better example to look at than the quote from Emmanuel Sanders, who is just like, man, I got to tell you, I'm so relieved. I went to the team store and I see Keenum jerseys.
Exactly.
It's like, wow.
That was just a moment of candor.
Right.
And who was undermining the quarterbacks more than those receivers the last 2 years?
Sure, sure.
I mean, the first year of Siemian, I mean, 2 weeks in, they're bawling about not getting the ball.
Yep, that's right.
And I get it, but I think it undermined him.
They're 2-0.
Yeah. And then, again, even last year, there's constant chip. Like, you know, it's one of those things, you're either the fountain or you're the drain. And it felt like they were draining. It was already like these quarterbacks were hanging on for dear life, and now you've got their players on off their own offense. Take talk radio out of it. Their own offense being like, what's up? You know, why am I not getting mine? Like, it was just a bad mix. And now I think, hey, we know who your quarterback is, and Keenum isn't going to be – like, they can go to him, but if you watch Keenum in the huddle, like, he's got some presence to
sure.
him.
Sure. Oh, there's no question about that.
And he's older than Siemian. Even,
yeah.
I think Siemian, again, could grow into some of that. It doesn't matter now. But Keenum's done it for a year. He played on a great team last year, and he's older. Like, you're not going to just bully him and walk up, give me the ball. He's going to be like,
No.
Last year, I felt that. Like, at times, it was just too many voices.
Yeah. There's no presence. There was no presence.
Well, again, but there's no presence when you don't know from game to week who the guy's going to be.
That's true. That's
now
true.
Now you know. Now, you know, barring injury, that you know. And this idea of, is Paxton getting better? Maybe he is. My point is, if you're playing Lynch, you're not getting to the playoffs next year. You're not. That's why I don't worry about it. I know everyone talks about the Nick Foles scenario, and it was a great scenario. But Foles had a season in the NFL of 27 touchdowns and 2 picks.
That's right.
So it's not like he was just unknown, just some random backup. He's got a resume that's pretty decent. You know, it was shaky for a few years there, but he had a year where he was in the MVP conversation statistically.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And they were on a good team in Philly, and he's done two things, Nick Foles. And this is just a side, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but Nick Foles has put together an unbelievable regular season. Regular season with that 27-2 in Philly, and then comes back and puts together the two best postseason games that I've seen a quarterback play in the championship game in the Super Bowl. So he showed you twice now that he can play.
Right.
Sorry.
And the most team, I get this idea, you need multiple quarterbacks to win, but let's be honest. How many teams win when they have to play their backup quarterback a lengthy amount of time?
Not a whole heck of a lot.
Again, that's why, maybe that happened. I would hate to see that happen to Keenum because that would suggest injury. But if Keenum plays well, the Broncos have a chance. They get to hang around. If he's ineffective and he's like he was a couple years ago, they have no chance. I mean, you're going to say Paxton's going to come to the rescue? Based on what? Maybe he would figure it out, but there's no evidence to suggest that. That is just foolhardy based on everything we've seen to think somehow Lynch would come in and rescue the season. How could you say that? It'd be like saying your fifth starter is suddenly going to become, you know, an ace. Like, really? Based on what? What are you seeing? Like, come on.
Which is why I believe and have said so on this program at least four or five times in the last 3 months, that if you are truly in win-now mode, you cannot have Paxton Lynch as your backup quarterback because it's contradictory unto itself. A guy that no one believes in, but then all your moves in one particular offseason are going to say, we are in win-now mode. Did a backup quarterback play this past year? Yep. Did he play the year before? Yep. Did he play the year before? Yep. Unfortunately, there is a likelihood that the backup quarterback is going to have to play. And the fact that it's Paxton Lynch, I mean, if you're a 500 team and he's got to play three games.
That could be your season.
It could be your season. And it flies in the face of this sense of urgency because they're trying to occupy two different lanes. The one, urgency, we're not going to lose back-to-back seasons since 1972. Case Keenum's our guy. We're going to get back in the playoffs. But at the same time, having this built-in caveat of we're still going to bring along slowly and expectedly, in air quotes, our young quarterback. And I don't like the divided focus of this.
Well, you raise a great point, and I'll go back to my baseball days. Part of the reason the Rockies always ran into trouble was because of the injury history of Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez, where they was like, well, when they played together, when they were in the same lineup, the Rockies were like 25 over. Like, they were a playoff team by winning percentage every time those two started together. The problem is they didn't play much together over the course of multiple seasons. And it ultimately came down with the Rockies. Like, they would say, if they play together, if they do this, I'm like, hope isn't a strategy. You can't hope. You keep hoping that they're going to play it, but they don't. So hope is not a strategy. So to your point, it would be a little disappointing if you center your whole offseason on we feel like we got the answer at quarterback, and he sprains his ankle and has to miss a couple weeks, and you lose games you should have won. But that's where it gets curious. Let's say after the first preseason game, it's clear that Lynch and Kelly are – it's just not happening. Like, you don't see it enough. Would you go out and try to get a Bridgewater?
Yes. Yes.
Would you?
That's the specific name that I threw out there. I said, call the New York Jets, and who do you want to give to us? We'll give you a fourth-round pick, third-round pick, whatever they want.
Would they give him Shane Ray?
Give us Josh McCown. Ooh, that's
I would.
It's an interesting idea.
I can't see a scenario where Ray's back next year. I hope he goes out and balls out and has a great season and gets paid somewhere. I like Shane Ray.
Sure.
But the reality is that it's a bit difficult when you piece the puzzle pieces together to see him back next year. If he plays well, he's going to get paid somewhere else. Chubb and Von Miller and Shaq Barrett.
And I'm hoping that he goes out and crushes it this season and signs a four-year deal or whatever. But back to the quarterback. If you are not inspired on what you see from either Chad Kelly or Paxton Lynch, and we're 2 weeks into camp, and you're looking around saying, Vance of all people, Vance's ass will get canned if they are not off to a good start.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you look around after 2 weeks of camp and you're not inspired by what you see, I'd be going bang on John's doorway if he needs even that doorway even needs a banging, because he can't afford another losing season. No one can. It's the NFL. So why won't you call the Jets and see if you can get Josh McCown or Teddy Bridgewater? Call the Buffalo Bills. They just drafted Josh Allen. They seem to like Nathan Peterman for whatever reason. See if you can get A.J. McCarron. For the second time in a year, depending on who you believe. But
it's going to be interesting, because if there just isn't the progress, you know, that you want to see out there, and you're just like, oof, man, if they had to, because the question is, if those two, between Kelly and Lynch, had to play like two games in a row, could they win a game for you? It isn't, could they play a half? Because the defense wouldn't adjust to him. And one of Lynch's best games of his career was at Tampa Bay when Simeon hurt his shoulder two years ago. And he just kind of drew it up in the dirt and was an athlete. And the next week he played Atlanta, they game planned for him, and it was a disaster. So I don't have any doubt Lynch or Kelly could come in for a half and could kind of get away with stuff. I do believe they could do that. But could they win if they were going to be like, you got to play for 2 weeks. This guy, he sprained his ankle, he hurt his foot, whatever. And if you don't, the answer to that question isn't yes, based on their offseason. That's why I kept saying I didn't see him drafting a quarterback, because everything they did was about getting back to the playoffs. Then you're right. You have to have some type of protection.
I would just hate to see the Broncos do all the right things. All the right things in the offseason, and then it come down to a 3-week stretch where it's only a 16-game schedule and it costs you. Because I watched it happen. I watched it happen just 2 years ago to the Oakland Raiders. They're a 12-win team, division winner,
and Connor
playoffs
Cook.
locked up. And then their guy goes down. Their car goes down. And then it wasn't even Connor Cook next. If you remember, it was Matt McGloin.
McGloin.
And then McGloin gets hurt, and then it's Connor Cook. But you didn't have a shot with either one of them. I mean, you really didn't. You didn't have a shot, and I would hate to see that happen to the Broncos. We got a giveaway, right? Steve, are we doing this now? Let's do this. Get those phones out.
Jukebox hero, Foreigner.
The fourth caller will receive a pair of tickets to Jukebox Hero Tour. Oh, this is good, Troy. Featuring Foreigner, Whitesnake, and Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin at Pepsi Center. Fourth caller, 303-713-1043. You a Foreigner guy, Troy?
I like a couple of their songs. This one included, we did a skit to this song in high school about Power Club heroes. That one barbell.
Power Club.
Yeah, our weightlifting club for our football team, we did a skit from this song. I mean, Foreigner's got some songs. They got some songs. I wouldn't say they were on my, like, they were not on my iPhone, my playlist right now, but yeah.
They'll come up on shuffle for me. The great Sandy Clough in the building. Got to bounce a couple things off of him. One, as it pertains to the Rockies, but two, as it pertains to Case Keenum and the Denver Broncos this season in one phase of the game in particular. We'll get to that next.